Welcome back, WNST Towson Baltimore and WNST.net. It is our WNST Rock Week presentation. This is going to be one of my favorites of the of all of these interviews we've put together, and certainly one of the bigger stars, and was a big star at the time of this conversation. So this conversation is from the summer of 1989. The concert was held on July 11th at the Capitol Center. The opening band was Skid Row. You can go back and Google that one up. And Bon Jovi was coming through the second time to the Capitol Center after selling out shows in the winter, doing a summer tour on the New Jersey album, which was just an enormous album on the backside of an enormous album in Slippery When Wet. And, you know, at this point, they are the darlings of MTV. They are heartthrobs and Richie Sambora's cavorting with Cher. Just to give you sort of a time frame of all of this, because we're going back almost three decades, but July 1989. And Bon Jovi's a pretty big star, and I had chatted with him at one point at the Baltimore Civic Center, then Civic Center, before it was Royal Farms Arena, and this was when they played with Cinderella there. And I, you know, was sort of backstage at a meet and greet at that point, and the band had just broken with You Give Love a Bad Name, and was about to, Living on a Prayer was about to happen. It's about 3 or 4 years prior to 1989 and where we are. We're now at the point where they're about to become one of the biggest bands in the world in 1989, and a real cross-market sensation with ballads and hits and on billboards everywhere. And Bon Jovi still made time to do interviews, and we talked about that within the framework of this interview. It's a very long conversation. It's not particularly combative as much as I preferred Slippery When Wet to the album, and I had seen them in the winter, and they were kind of scuffling a little bit, and I think trying to find out what it takes, and I saw this in the documentary many years later, what it takes to be on the road. It's, I mean, I think the perception that I had was it was just all girls and booze and drugs. These people needed to get from place to place and perform, and the bands that were good at performing, and Bon Jovi was one of those bands, got to become an eternal band because they took care of their business. And if you've seen their documentary, it's wonderful. It was made 25 years later, you know, after this interview. But this is still a very early raw Bon Jovi. When you consider his life and what he's done politically, charitably, in sports, in trying to buy an NFL franchise, and being a sporty guy, and being sort of an iconic New Jersey person on the back end of Springsteen. Really, one of the really cool things I got to do was speak to John Bon Jovi at this point in his career. I did not put this in the interview, but we had talked about putting together a show, or excuse me, a story for The Sun. My editor was looking for something offbeat and really cool, something that would be a front page kind of story. And Bon Jovi agreed to let me behind the curtain on how a rock and roll show is put together. I had never written a story like that. I had asked him because he was sort of famously good with people who cared about his music, and I did. And I think it comes across in this interview that I was a big fan, unlike, you know, a Styx or a Rush or a, you know, Ted Nugent or an Aerosmith. When I was a kid, you know, I heard my first Bon Jovi song when I was 15, and he's a couple of years older than me, so we're more contemporaries than that, but still a really, really big star, one of the biggest musicians on the planet at that point, and he really knew a lot about the business. If you listen to this interview, he talks about the Doubleday station, the other radio station in D.C., because he knew the program directors. He had shaken hands with everyone in radio because he wanted to get run away played, and you know, those songs in the early days that broke him, it was about MTV, but it was about every single market. And Bon Jovi understood the business of music, and you can hear that in this interview. And he knew that my stuff went all over the wire as well. At this point, I was just getting picked up by the LA Times Syndicate for my freelance work, and you know, my stories would wind up in other places. So he had actually agreed to spend the day with me. He was playing tennis. He offered to play tennis and then come down to the Capitol Center. And he got sick, and he actually called me a day and a half before and said that he wasn't feeling well, but he wanted me to come down to the show. He didn't want to screw my story up, but he couldn't spend the day. He said, come down early. So I went down for sound check. It was a very short sound check. I went into the dressing rooms. In his dressing room, I'll never forget, there were he had a wardrobe, on wheels, and in it were hockey jerseys from all of the places he had visited. You know, there was a New Jersey Devils jersey in there. There was a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey in there with his name on it, because that's what they did in that era. You know, they presented during the encore, you know, Bon Jovi would wear a Penguins jersey out for the Penguins fans at the Igloo in Pittsburgh at that point. And that was kind of getting over. And you see pictures of that, the rock stars over the years. I remember the night Geddy Lee wore, you know, an Orioles cartoon bird on his T-shirt. Underneath of the jersey he was wearing at the arena. So, but anyway, they opened for 38 Specials, the first time I'd ever really heard of them at the Spectrum. They were then opening for Cinderella, but quickly became a bigger band than that, and they were the biggest band in the world in the summer of 1989. This is John Bon Jovi on the New Jersey tour, and I think you'll really enjoy this. I know I did.
Hello.
Hi, Nestor.
Yeah.
John Bon Jovi.
Hey, how you doing?
Perfect. How are you?
All right. A lot of interviews today, huh?
Yeah.
You're missing a good tennis match is what you're missing.
Yeah, I'm going to get out there and play myself today.
You're a wanted man, huh?
Busy guy.
So where are you now?
New Hampshire.
What part of New Hampshire?
Manchester.
Are you? Oh, really?
Yeah. I never even been here.
How big a place are you playing tonight?
No, I'm off today, unbelievably.
Oh, you're off today and you can't even enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I am enjoying it. I'm hanging.
You gotta talk to schmucks like me.
No, man, I don't mind at all.
How's the tour going?
Just great.
Are you still playing pretty full halls? I know here that they're having some, not problems selling tickets, but they had put two shows on here.
No, actually, we didn't want to do two shows, and the promoter was trying to stuff two shows down my throat because it's a lot of money for him. We had no intention of ever doing two shows there. We'd been there once already. That was enough. And we're playing somewhere right after. I don't have
Richmond.
Itinerary.
Richmond.
Richmond?
Yeah, on Wednesday.
Yeah. So we hadn't played Richmond yet on this tour, and we'd already been to the Cap Center. Digging through here trying to find an itinerary.
Dig it up, John.
Yeah, no, forget it, man. This bag, if I stuck my arm in too deep, it'll eat it. Man, I got more in my bag. Yeah, so we haven't been to Richmond before, and that's where we're going.
So where do you head after New Hampshire? I mean, how much traveling are you doing, and how much flying are you doing?
We fly almost every day. We're here. We got in last night about 2:30, 3 o'clock. Woke up today doing my phoners, and we have the day off. Tomorrow we play here. Then the next day I have no idea. It's July now, right?
Right.
So I could throw my June itinerary away, which is sitting in my book. It has nothing to do with anything.
You made it, huh?
Yeah, see, I have an idea where I am, what I'm doing. I just work here.
How much sleep do you get?
I get 6 hours a day, at least.
I guess that's enough. How many changes have you made to set since you guys were here before?
Quite a few. We changed the material drastically. The Cap Center is one of those few arenas in America that has their own in-house video, but we've taken a full-time video crew out. Oh, wow. We've also changed the opening act.
It was Skid Row before, right?
I mean, it's like a whole different animal now. If you saw it now, you know, I mean, it's... I know I'm going to markets a second time. Believe me, I do much different than we do last time. But it's cool. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I remember the last show. I mean, it didn't seem like you really emphasized Slippery a whole lot. I mean, you did more of the stuff off in New Jersey, which I guess is expected when you're out on the road to sell albums more than anything else and to get your face around. But, I mean, you left, like, Raise Your Hands off and you left Never Say Goodbye off. And have you put those songs back in?
Depending. I mean, take a song like Never Say Goodbye. A guy really asked me to do it yesterday, you know. He says, you know, do this tune. I'd really like to hear it. And I do requests quite often.
Play Raise Your Hands,
you know,
too.
We stopped a lot of shows and said, okay, what do you want to hear? You know, something like Raise Your Hands, I used to open with it every night.
Right.
So I'm pretty bored with it. Last night I felt like doing Living in Sin. Well, I left that I'll Be There for You, which was the number one, you know, single in America, to do Living in Sin, because there's just so many of the slow songs that you can play. But I did Never Say Goodbye acoustically, just with an acoustic, by myself, and it was different. You know, we're doing Prayer acoustically, just me and Richie. And again, that was my biggest number one single ever. You know, it was number one for 4 weeks. But we do it with two acoustics just to change it up a bit. We're doing Wild as the Wind. We're doing Love for Sale. What else are we doing?
I remember in your encore, you did a whole bunch of oldies. You still doing that? Or
sure, and they change daily. You know, it's whatever I've heard on the way to the show that day. Yeah.
You just call it out on stage, or you make this up during the sound check?
On the way to sound check, usually, because I listen to the radio in the day sometime, or I'm playing CDs in my room, or, you know, however I heard music that day, I'll hear a song and say, oh, what a great tune, let's do that. And we'll work it out at sound check. One thing I got is a band of players. My guys, they can play, boy. You know, so I just call out the key, and we're in.
How much are you using that ramp that we've seen in the video? I mean, I saw it live, but...
Yeah, we use it twice during the night.
You still open it up on Let It Rock?
We're opening it with Lay Your Hands on Me still, yeah.
Well, the Let It Rock is when you first used the ramp again, or have you been using that? I think the time I saw you was doing it.
That's right, we were. Well, because it depends. Again, it depends. I've done Lay Your Hands on Me on that ramp. I like doing Let It Rock out there because there's a time delay and it's the kind of song that really fits in where you could be a half a beat behind, you know. So that works for me out there. It's also a big participation song, so that works as well. So...
I mean, do you feel like the album has cooled off a little bit now? You've been out for 9 months. I mean, what were your expectations for this tour coming off of something so big?
A phenomenon. Of course, I'm not satisfied. Doesn't mean that it's not good. I mean, 5.5 million in America isn't nothing to bitch about. I'm not satisfied, mind you.
Were you expecting to be doing stadiums by the summer?
I'm doing stadiums in a lot of places. I sold out Giant Stadium. I had a house record at Giant Stadium 2 weeks ago. Not Bruce, not Amnesty, not Madonna, Michael Jackson, The Who, no one. I put 72,000 people in there, the most there's ever been for a show.
Yeah, I saw there was a full-page ad in Rolling Stone.
Yeah, we sold it out way before that ad was even bought. I don't know why the promoter bought it, but I guess just to tell America that we did it. 3 hours. We played Silver Stadium in Rochester just the other day. We played the Rubber Bowl in Akron last weekend. So yeah, we're doing stadiums where stadiums are called for.
But places like Washington you've already been to, you're going to come back and do the arenas again.
Just the arenas, yeah.
Okay. What was the process for picking songs on New Jersey? Now, I heard some strange things that you got a bunch of kids together and you played a bunch of songs and said, what do you like?
What happened is we recorded a lot of songs, demos. We gave them out to whoever felt like listening to them just to get another opinion. And then we had a party at the studio and invited a bunch of strangers in, but people that were, you know, music fans, not necessarily Bon Jovi fans, music fans, had a party and played the songs. And then, you know, in the course of the night, hey, you like that? You hate that? You know, it wasn't like a test at school, which has been, you know, it's been misinterpreted, you know. It was just a party. There was a lot of junk food and a lot of people around, and you could see if someone was tapping their foot to it or not. And I said, you like this tune or not? And some of the songs that I wanted on the album didn't make it, but that's okay. You know, I mean, why be selfish about it?
Have you played any of those live, or have you practiced them? Or
yeah, I did a thing on a national radio syndicate once of a song called Diamond Ring, which I really wanted to put on the record, which may be on the next one. Something called Let's Make It Baby, which I think, you know, is going to turn a lot of people's heads. It just wasn't the time. So maybe next time, which I've never done before. I've never held music for a next album, but I think I may do that next time.
How do you think that the stuff that made it on the New Jersey is going to stack up against Slippery or Fahrenheit or any of the other older stuff? 10 years from now, you're going to look back and say, well, New Jersey was a down period for us, you know, after Slippery.
I understand what you're saying. I don't think it is, you know. I mean...
Well, I know. I mean, just from my own personal standpoint, I mean, Slippery When Wet, when I went to parties the year that was out, that was it. I mean, that album was playing. That album was playing on the beach. That album was playing in the malls, in the elevators, everywhere. And I still play it. I mean, I still play it a whole lot. And I haven't got sick of it yet. Whereas, I mean, I haven't listened to Jersey enough to get sick of it yet. But, of course, it's not 4 years old now.
Right.
So, you know, 10 years from now, what do you think?
I would hope to say that, you know, that and for my first year, I always said that the first album was as good an album as I could make. So it's the same way I feel about Jersey. It's the very best album I could make. You know, I mean, I had to listen to it about 10 days ago when I started doing Love for Sale again because I forgot the words to it. They put the record on one day in the dressing room, and I never listen to my records ever. I have no idea. We were doing In and Out of Love because I really just started getting into these requests, right?
Right.
So somebody yelled out In and Out of Love, and I went, I forgot all the words to it. Okay. And the next day I listened to it in the dressing room. I forgot it, you know, so I put on the Jersey album. And I like the album. It still stands up with me, you know, 9 months later. I think it's a good album. So, you know, to me it's as good an album as I could make.
Can you hang on 1 second? I got this call waiting.
No problem.
Thanks. Hold on. Do when you're on the road, do you go home or like your Meadowland shows? Now that had to be something special. I mean, how many of your friends were there?
A lot.
I mean, your Sayreville
probably
people
had 1,500 backstage passes.
Oh God, one hell of a party.
Yeah. And I definitely make sure we throw a party at home. That's for sure.
Now where is home that you gave your house away?
It's in Jersey.
Oh, I mean, what happened with the MTV
That's
giveaway?
My parents' house.
What happened with that whole thing?
They were sponsoring the first leg of the tour. They wanted to do a contest. They wanted something to do with the state of New Jersey, being that was the album title. And my brother Matt, 14 years old kid, said, hey, why don't we do this? And it was as simple as that. Why don't we give them the house? Because the house was for sale anyhow. And they did.
So the house that Bon Jovi grew up in was up for sale and no one bought it. Is that
it was just on the market. I mean, it didn't necessarily say, hey, this is John Bon Jovi's house, you know, buy this and make it a museum. My parents live there. I don't live there, you know.
But you grew up there.
Yeah. So the house was for sale. It doesn't mean that somebody wants to go and spend that kind of money to buy a house, you know, just because I live there.
So when you went out and moved out when you made your first album?
Yeah.
Okay, because it was just my understanding when you did Runaway, that you know, you were still pretty poor.
I wrote Wild in the Streets living there. You know, I mean, on my third album, I was still writing songs there, but I didn't live there anymore.
All right. And when did you get married? Oh, I got like a little blurb that said you were married.
Yeah, I'm married, but I don't want to get into my personal life.
That's not for public consumption, huh?
Yeah, only just because, you know, at some point you got to keep something sacred.
All right. How much do you see fans now?
Quite a bit.
I mean, how many backstage passes are given on a certain night? And how many to fans and how many to friends?
I don't know anybody in New Hampshire, but I would tend to think that they'll, I don't know, 50 or so.
So now, today, you're going to go out and play tennis, is that right?
Yeah.
You're going to go outside.
Sure.
Do you get mobbed?
No. Uh-uh.
I mean, don't some fans, I mean, the radical ones, just know where you're going to stay, find out, and just wait for you to come out and with a tennis racket and a headband on?
I imagine there'll be some, and you sign an autograph, you take a picture, and then they're happy, and you're happy, and you go out. It's really not the great misconception that the world thinks it is. You know, if you go out in public, it's not that people want you to die. They want to say hello, or they want to, you know, shake your hand, take a picture, get an autograph, whatever. And then that's it. They don't want to, you know, hang out in your room all day.
Well, I mean, I've talked to you before. I met you when you played Baltimore a couple years. I thought that you were incredibly accessible. I mean, you weren't what you are now then, though. I mean, the album had just broken then, Slippery did. And I just thought by now you might be the kind of person that would be cooped up, that would have to be cooped up. Because, I mean,
you look, you know, people go to me, wow, you're calling our hometown paper. You know, I mean, yeah, I am. What's the big deal? I don't mind doing it one bit. And you know, to me, it's all part of it. I like doing it.
Okay. What music do you listen to when you said you got your CD collection? J.D. Constantine wrote a story. I don't know when you talked to him, but his story ran in the paper today. And he said you had a grab bag of various things.
Yeah, I do. I listen to quite a bit of different stuff. I don't know, whatever. Let me reach in here. Bag of Tricks. The top tape that I'm looking at is Hank Williams, Sr. Prince, the Atlantic Rhythm and Blues Collection. Led Zeppelin, Ricky Lee Jones, Don Henley.
You got the new Henley?
Yeah.
You like it?
Yeah, it takes some getting used to, though. Elvis Costello, Graham Parker. So, pretty varied.
Well, how much do the other guys in the band have, you know, input in the... When you write a song, you just write the lyrics, somebody else writes the music, or...?
I do both, and so does Richie. We both do both.
So what happens when you come into the studio? You get the other guys, Tico and these guys, and you say, this is what we want from you, or...
No, not at all. My guys are... Oh, thanks, man. My guys are very creative, and... No, in fact, here's a little comparison. Rich and I wrote and produced a song for the Russian band Gorky Park,
right?
Who we helped get a record deal, right? And their drummer did this whole album of his on a Simmons electric drum kit. So the kid has a hard time speaking English for one thing, and he doesn't like to play drums for another. Yes, I don't know.
Maybe they smuggled the damn thing in,
well,
or something.
He just likes to play with this goddamn Simmons thing. So he leaves and leaves me to play the goddamn drums. I have to program every bass drum beat for 3.5 minutes. I've never had to do this before. When I play a song, Tico is the world's greatest drummer, in my opinion. This kid is amazing. He plays drums. I spent 8 hours with the goddamn boom, 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 bass drum. Fuck this. I give this song to Teak. He plays it. I tell him I like it or I don't like it. Change this, don't change that. I don't want to sit and program a bass drum for 8 hours. So I leave it up to, and that's why we are a band.
Well, I mean, how often do you see each other when you're done with it? When you go off with your wife?
We live together. This band sees each other more than you see each other's girlfriends and wives.
All right. Well, where did you meet Richie? And where did you meet these other guys? What wasn't one of your members of your band in Frankie the Knockouts? Is that
Tico?
Okay. That was a good song, Sweetheart.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever happened to that band, and why I never even hear that song anymore.
I don't know.
Where did you
think is they were managed by Robin of Batman and Robin?
Burt Ward?
Yeah. That didn't help.
That's pretty funny. I mean, were they a Philadelphia band?
It was from Jersey.
Jersey, okay.
Brunswick, New Jersey.
And you were already teamed up with Richie at this point when all this had happened?
No, Richie wasn't in the band. No. I was putting a band together around the song Runaway to do a couple of clubs for this radio station because I was sort of breaking regionally. Washington was playing me, as a matter of fact, DC 101. Or was it WAVA?
Yeah, I think it was DC 101. I'm not sure. But
I don't remember. One of the stations down there, the Doubleday station, was playing me. And I didn't have a band. I was just a songwriter looking to get a band together because I couldn't afford to keep a band.
Well, they were playing you. How did you get the song?
I wrote a song. It was on a homegrown album. But it did, you know, like your little radio station makes their homegrown record. They play it at once at midnight and it dies.
Who compiled the music in this thing, though? I mean,
a DJ, a New York DJ.
Okay.
And he found me and Twisted Sister on the same album. And he convinced me to be on it. I had no desire to be on it because I thought they'd play this thing once at midnight on a Sunday night, you know? And I laughed it off and I said, yeah, fuck this.
And what were you doing at this time?
Writing songs and working in a recording studio. And what happened was it was a fluke. I started to get national airplay. So DC 101 goes and plays my record. Well, WAVA is pissed off because they don't know where this record's coming from, but they want to play it too. So this is how this war started across the country, playing my record. And I put a band together to play a couple clubs. And I got all these guys. It was supposed to be 3 weeks. It's been 6 years. The Knockouts were just between albums. Richie and Al were trying to get their own band off the ground. Dave was going to college. and I was pumping, you know, my songs out.
So this is almost like a 50s story. You know, this used to happen 30 years ago, but now it doesn't happen that way to anybody but you.
And it did, and it's pretty wild.
All right. Have you seen any other live acts when you've been out on the road this go-around? Have you seen The Who yet?
No.
Do you aspire to see it?
The Who is down there now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're here tonight, the last night and tonight.
Yeah. Somebody was trying to get us to go down there, but nah, we're going to just spend the night off. I heard the show's phenomenal.
I mean, I've heard mixed reviews, but I heard it's not really, you know, The Who, you know, with Pete doing his deal.
Well, I never saw The Who.
I saw McKenny in 82.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought, to me, that's The Who because, I mean, you know, I'm 21 years old and, you know, I didn't see Keith Moon. I didn't grow up in the 60s. So, to me, The Who is Kenny Jones. But I also read today in Considine's story that you like baseball. How often do you see games? I mean, what else do you do on the road to?
I go to a game if I'm in a town. I was in Pittsburgh and I went to a game. It's the only game I've been to this year. I went to a bunch of basketball games this season. We enjoy that. If we have a night off, what the fuck else are we going to do, you know, sit in a hotel bar?
You don't have any friends in New Hampshire.
I love going out to a game.
All right.
Junk food, drinking beer.
You're going to go to the Soviet Union soon?
Next month.
Okay. When are you going and what does it look like there?
We're headlining a big, big show.
One-day show?
Two days.
2 days, okay.
140,000 people each day, televised in 50 countries, album to follow. The bill is we're headlining, then Scorpions, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, Cinderella, Skid Row, Gorky Park, and two other Russian bands. Aerosmith may or not be on the bill. Who knows? They're supposed to be. Everyone did a song by an artist that someone's died, either with drug or alcohol abuse. Someone did Zeppelin, someone did The Who, someone did Thin Lizzy, someone did the Sex Pistols, someone did Hendrix, Joplin.
Right.
And so this album is coming out next month as well.
All the people fucked up, basically.
Yeah. It's a good life, man, you know? It's a great life if you can get it. And there's no reason to fuck it up, regardless of, you know, if you're in a rock band or if you're the president of the United States. You know, there's a reason why George don't get up every day and do a big line of gack and go to work.
What's that reason?
You know, he's got to run the biggest business in the world, America.
And it is a business. Well, I certainly appreciate your time, and maybe we'll...
If we can still get it together next week, hey, I'm open to it. You're just going to...
Well, what I'd like to do is something just a little more in-depth about what you really do, or what you did yesterday, you know, and Wednesday's paper will say, well, Bon Jovi was in town yesterday. Well, you know, what the hell did he do all day? Everybody wants to know about... I mean, that's my number one question.
I like your angle. I think it's great. But I, honest to God, I can't tell you what my schedule is. I have no fucking idea.
So this isn't even your decision to make.
They'll ask me if I would take the time to sit with you, and I would say, well, you know, one, is he a fan? One, does he know what he's talking about? You know, but you do, and it's fine with me. And you're not a 40-year-old guy that would rather listen to REM, so I can handle this, you know? that would be, you know, I would have to know these things, because otherwise you're going to come out, and the guy's going to want to know about my wife, and it's really not his business, kind of. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
If you want to talk about what's behind the scenes at a rock band show, I'll do that, sure. Now, when you call Margaret, she'll call me back on Monday, and you'll say, Margaret, he said it's cool. She'll call me back and say, did you say it's cool? And I'll say, yeah. So if Tuesday, if we can in fact do it, then it would be fine.
What time, what kind of thing?
The best thing, you come there and that sound check, which is usually like 5:30, 6 o'clock. See what it's all about. It's Sam Borer's birthday, so I'm sure he'll be a little off the wagon that day.
It's the All-Star game.
It's the All-Star game?
Yeah.
No, but that's not in Washington. Where the hell is it? It's in Houston or something?
No, it's in California. Houston was last year.
So it's... I'd love to go to the All-Star game.
Maybe you can do the National Anthem one year.
I've been asked to do the National Anthem for lots of things. No, not for me.
I talked to Rush a couple years ago, and they wanted to come to a ball game here, and we had talked about going together, and Geddy Lee and I, and I called the Orioles, and I said, hey, you know, can I get some tickets for these guys? You know, Canadian rock band, they love baseball, and they put baseball on their albums and all. And he said, do they do the national anthem? Geddy says, we don't do the national anthem. We don't do anything without a monitor. So, all right. Well, then maybe I'll get in touch with you Tuesday. And,
okay.
Maybe I'll bring a tennis racket or something.
Yeah,
who the hell knows? All right,
I'll talk to you then.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.